Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
This isn't yelling. When I yell, you'll know it.
You know, we try to instill all the good things in them, have morals, and to be something.
Go pick up your booty or you're going to get a timeout, mister.
No!
There's a fine line between mothering and smothering.
One day they're babies, the next thing you know, they're off on their own.
I'm Jim Burns. When your father is perhaps the best-known evangelist in the entire world, and your unmarried teenage daughter tells you she's pregnant, well, how would you respond? Author Ruth Graham, the daughter of Billy Graham, knows exactly how that feels, and she also knows that God deals in taking the broken parts of our lives and making them whole again, even when it seems like the whole world watched you fail. During the next half hour, you'll hear my honest and candid discussion with Ruth Graham about her daughter's out-of-wedlock pregnancy and the continuing story of righteousness in the midst of ruins. That's coming up today on Homeward. We'll be right back.
From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. In just a moment, part two of Jim's continuing conversation with Ruth Graham, the daughter of Billy Graham and his late wife, Ruth Bell Graham, and she's written a powerful book called In Every Pew Sits a Broken Heart. It's about her own journey, and as you read the story, you think, oh my goodness, this is the woman who's the youngest daughter of the world's most famous evangelist, and there's issues dealing with divorce and out-of-wedlock birth of her teenage daughter, and it's an incredible story. We're so glad you're here. By the way, if you'd like an audio CD of this program, we'll be happy to send you one as our way of thanking you for your gift of any amount in support of the Ministry of Homeward. You can initiate that process at homeward.com. And now, here's Jim.
In every pew sits a broken heart, hope for the hurting. I'm with Ruth Graham for the second day, and we're talking about her story of really a broken heart. But it's not just about a broken heart, it's about great hope. And if you were with us yesterday, and if you weren't, I encourage you to get the tape. But if you were with us yesterday, that you heard a woman talk about the fact that she had incredible pain of a marriage where there was betrayal, and then rushing into a second marriage with what she called a rash decision, and then separating, eventually divorcing, and going through the process of hope and healing. Ruth Graham is the third daughter of Billy Graham and his wife, Ruth Bell Graham. And she's an experienced conference speaker and a Bible teacher known for her honesty, her authenticity. And if you heard yesterday's program, you absolutely understand exactly what I mean. Ruth has three children and three grandchildren and lives in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. Ruth, welcome back to Homeward.
Thank you very much.
And Shenandoah Valley, you live in a beautiful spot.
I do indeed. I'm very fortunate.
That is just a great spot. Now, before we ended yesterday, we talked about the process of pain that was going through. And then there was a time in your life, once you've been to your church and there'd been a healing process, kind of start through the process, your father, the illustration of your father coming in and holding you almost as if you were the prodigal daughter and loving you and showing you unconditional love. And you decided to go off to Africa. And when you went to Africa, there was the healing process continued in a beautiful way. But
That's
when
right.
you got back from Africa, and when you returned, your youngest daughter, Windsor, broke the news to you that she was pregnant. Tell
That's
us
right.
how God worked in that particular situation. Here you thought you were kind of done with some of these problems, and now there's another one that takes place.
These problems sort of rolled right after, like a wave of the ocean. It
right.
kept coming and hitting the
right.
shore. And yes, Windsor confessed to me that she thought she was pregnant, and indeed she was. And my first thoughts were to nurture her, to protect her, because I could see what was going to happen. My second thought was, this isn't supposed to happen in my family. Now what do I do? This wasn't supposed to happen in Billy Graham's family. And what will people think? But I knew that she had looked for love in all the wrong places, and I wasn't going to give her another reason to do that. So I knew that I wanted to stand with her and walk with her, and I had been given unconditional love in my failure, so I could do no less. I couldn't point a finger, I couldn't blame, I couldn't shame her. I knew what it was to be loved, and I wanted to pass that on. And as I watched my child give birth to a perfect baby girl, my heart ached to realize that this child was only loaned to us for a few hours because Windsor had decided to release this baby into the loving arms of adoptive parents. And that was a very difficult time for us to release your firstborn grandchild to someone else. But we knew it was the best decision. It was the right decision. And Windsor seemed to stabilize for a few months and then began a downward spiral that was agonizing to watch as she created sorrow upon sorrow for herself and for others.
And Windsor actually became pregnant again for the second time.
That's right, because she had an empty heart, empty womb, and empty arms. And the Lord says there's no greater love but that a person lay down their life for their friend. And my daughter had laid down her life for her child. And 16 months later, she grabbed my hand very tightly and gave birth to a little boy, my grandson.
And what has been the experience for you in Windsor through the process of now raising this grandson, and how is she doing?
She's a single mom. She's doing very well. She went ahead, finished college with honors. She's got both her real estate and her insurance licenses. She's a good mom. Wyatt is 7 years old now. He's in a wonderful Christian school. He's his mom's conscience, and just a joy to me. He's going to come spend 2 weeks with me this summer.
You know, in the previous conversation that we had on yesterday's program, we talked about masks. Mm. You say in the book that you felt a self-imposed pressure of being Billy Graham's daughter, Ruth Graham's daughter, and you're right that you really felt like you needed to mask your shortcomings and your failures, and now you have a family member who has also, in reality, had shortcomings and failures. Mm-hmm. Talk to me more about the process of wearing the mask, and a lot of times you'll say, well, you know, this is Billy Graham's daughter, but you know, I think a lot of kids feel that about their parents. Mm-hmm. My daughters, not too long ago, we were having a conversation, and I said, now, you don't feel any pressure, you know, about church and things like that from us, do you? And, you know, who are we? We're people who love God and, you know, want to serve Him, but, you know, we're not Billy Graham and Ruth Graham. And my kids said, absolutely, I feel mm-hmm. incredible pressure. Mm-hmm. Well, do we place that pressure on you? Well, no, you don't place it. It's just who you are. And everybody thinks, you know, it must be wonderful in our family. And our family is just a normal family that has its bumps and bruises. And so I was aware again that they have the problem of potentially putting on masks. What do you say to not just people who, your situation is a situation that's so unique because of your last name and who you were brought up with, but what do you say to those people who say, you know what, my kids feel that same kind of pressure?
Well, I think it's important for either parents or those children to understand who they are in Christ, and that we are gifts of God to Jesus. Mm. God gave us to His Son as a special gift, and we were exactly what He wanted. We were the right size, the color, the shape, everything. We were just what God wanted, what Jesus wanted. And when we understand that we're gifts and we belong to God, that means we belong. And one of the needs of the human heart is to feel like they belong somewhere, and that we are, again, that total acceptance, unconditional love. We belong. We're children of the King. We also are clay pots. You know, we get fractured, as we bump along with other people, and we're fallible. But I think it's so important to understand that who we are in Christ. Colossians tells us we are complete in Him. What do you add to complete? Nothing. We are totally complete in Him, and when we understand that, then we ought not to put the pressure on us, because God's not putting the pressure on us.
Isn't that amazing? God is not putting the pressure on us. We're putting the pressure on ourselves.
That's right.
You were putting the pressure on yourself because of the family background that you came from, and not just the family background, but just because as a Christ follower, mm-hmm. you'd made some mistakes, and we put the pressure on ourselves, because you're saying God doesn't put that pressure on us.
No, not at all. It's something we've self-imposed, right. And I think it's a tool from Satan.
Boy, I sure hear that. You know, in your book, and by the way, it's just a wonderful book, In Every Pew Sits a Broken Heart, Hope for the Hurting, you write about divorce and your children's struggles with unwed pregnancy, drug use, and eating disorder. I mean, just so much stuff. How did you get over worrying about what others might think or say once your situation became public?
I had to get over that a long time ago. I gave it to the Lord. I truly did. And that sounds easy, and sometimes we, on the radio or television or in a book, you make it sound easy, and real life isn't easy. It's tough. And for me, my faith is sometimes a hang on tight kind of faith. It's not this, I've got faith and march on into the future. I have to hang on. And when I can no longer hang on, I have to have faith enough that God's got me in His everlasting arms. But it's not easy. And I think we just give things to God and we have to leave them there. But I did have to leave that with God, because I was too tired, and I knew I had blown it. I knew I had blown it big time, and I had to turn it over to Him.
You know, I want to give you an illustration, and I want you to comment on the illustration, because I think it fits so perfectly with your story that you have in your book. The story is actually a battle that the Israelites and the Amalekites had, and Moses had his staff, and he had his hands up, and when he would have his staff up, because his hands were raised, the Israelites would win the battle. When he got tired and drained and beat up, he would just put his hands down, mm-hmm. and finally had to bring people around him to help him keep his hands up so that the Israelites could win the battle, and they eventually did, of course. Who were the people in your life who kind of came around you to kind of help lift your hands? You were too tired and too drained, so you had your hands up, and as you had your hands up to continue this, who helped you do that?
I had wonderful prayer group. I had, of course, family, and then one particular woman who came alongside of us when my daughter was expecting and took my daughter into her home and walked her through the process and decision. Do you want to release? Do you want to parent? What are the consequences of both? Then was there with her, was her birthing coach, was there when the baby was delivered, facilitated the adoption, walked with us afterwards. God sent wonderful people into my life to help me, and I look back and see, I didn't see it at the time, see how all the pieces of the puzzle, you know, we see life sometimes backwards. We see how God works, and God certainly has done that. And one of Israel's great sins was not remembering. And it's important to remember what God has done.
Oh boy, is that powerful. I think of David and the Psalms that he wrote where he was complaining, lamenting, whatever his issue was, and then he would always fall back on, but I will remember. I will remember. And it's encouraging to hear Ruth Graham as the daughter of Billy and Ruth Bell Graham saying that, boy, it's great to look back now and remember on those times where God was really staying her steps. Today here on the Homeward Broadcast, we're digging back in the archives, revisiting a program from a couple of years ago where Dr. Jim Burns had a chance to chat with Ruth Graham about her book, In Every Pew Sits a Broken Heart. We'll have the conclusion of this program in just a moment.
I'm Jim Burns with today's Homeward Snapshot.
Okay, everyone, sorry about the short notice on this family meeting, but the Nelsons, you remember, Fred and Sandy. Well, their son Paul was going away to college, and he and a friend of his were driving across country when they got hit by a drunk driver, and both of them were killed instantly.
Oh my gosh, that's so sad.
I know, Heather, I know.
I mean, this is tragic. Paul knew the lead singer for the band Widespread Panic. He was going to get me his autograph.
Well, even at times like this, kids can be pretty self-absorbed. It comes with the territory. In fact, even the best kids often don't have much desire to reach outside of themselves. That's why it's up to us as parents to find every opportunity we can to get them involved in something other than themselves. Well, I want you to have a copy of my brand new tip sheet on this topic. It's called Taking Your Kids from Selfish to Selfless. And you can download a free copy from our website at homeward.com. Ruth Graham, the daughter of Ruth and Billy Graham. In Every Pew Sits a Broken Heart, and Ruth is telling her story. It's a process of telling her story of a broken heart, but I'm so hopeful, Ruth, from this conversation. You've brought such hope and such meaning with your authenticity. Thank you.
That's the point. This is not about me. This is about how we can help the hurting, and very often it's in taking our mask down, being honest and vulnerable, that ministry takes place, and that's my hope and prayer. And also this book, so many people don't know how to help people. They want to, but they either don't know how, and so they make a mistake, or they just remain silent. And I want in this book to give tips to the one who cares, how to help the hurting.
Right. It really is a practical book.
It's
a story,
practical.
But it's not just about the story. It's very, very practical as we go through. You know, in your life, I mean, here you are writing about divorce and your child struggle with unwed pregnancy and drug and eating disorder and all the rest. Did you go through a time of questioning God? Mm.
Absolutely. And God invites our questions. He wants us to be honest. He wants us to come to Him. And there's nothing that we can say to Him He hasn't heard before. And He wants us to be very honest. And we have good illustrations in Jeremiah. We have good illustrations. The Lord Himself, you know, asked why. And David asked why and struggled. So Job certainly asked God questions.
So you're telling me that through all this, it's okay for us to say, God, I'm questioning your
Absolutely.
Leadership.
I told God over and over again he'd picked the wrong Graham for this. And I had lots of questions. Why? Why didn't he prevent it? Why did this happen?
Right.
But God invites our honesty. He can work with that because we're wanting to dialogue with him. And as long as we're dialogue, you know, we're nurturing hope and expressing our faith.
And, you know, that's a right concept of God. Because a lot of people, I think, have a wrong concept of God where they say, well, you know, my goodness, I don't really want to talk. I'm questioning, but I'm not going to talk to him. And what he says, you see this in the Old Testament, especially as you mentioned. You know, there's sometimes a wrestling with God and an almost an arguing, mm-hmm. and that's not have a lack of reverence. It's actually to say, you know what, I don't understand this, and I have a personal relationship with you. And if we have a personal relationship, there's going to be times when we're going to have to question each other, and that's what I hear you saying you were doing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So you're saying it's not wrong to question God.
No, it's not. I think sometimes we have to be content with his silence. He doesn't always answer us and answer us in the way we want. And sometimes there is silence. And that's frustrating. But that's where faith comes in. That's that hang on tight kind of faith when we don't have the answers and we can't see the future. But we know that God's there with us.
How do we create a safe place? As you deal with this, we have to create a safe place for wounded people to express themselves. And I'm not sure that the church has always been the perfect place. And frankly, I'm not sure it's always the family either. But how do you create the safe place for wounded people?
I think the first step is making ourselves vulnerable, making ourselves honest and taking our masks off. And then people realize, hey, I can relate. Yeah, they've experienced something that I can relate to. They know what it's like to hurt. They know what it's like to question. And when we take our masks off, we give them permission to be honest. And that's where it begins. And you have to make yourself available. You know, you really do have to be not rushing through the church door and saying, oh, well, nice to see you, or how are you, goodbye. But to make yourself available and to be a trustworthy friend, to be someone that prays for someone, and to listen and listen. And listen again. And because people who have a broken heart very often just need somebody to listen. They don't need advice. They don't need to be told what to do. They don't need Bible verses even sometimes. They just need somebody to listen. And if we make ourselves available and we're vulnerable ourselves, that they can relate to us, then that's when the masks begin to come off and the isolation begins to melt.
Boy, you are talking the right language there. How do you transfer this kind of wisdom to children? You have a mother's heart, and through this book, I see a mother's heart. I feel a mother's heart. And, you know, sometimes a mom gets it or a dad gets it, and then they want to transfer it to the next generation, build a legacy. How do you convey this message that you have to your children?
Well, I think my mother was correct when she said, if you want your children to eat vegetables, make sure they see you enjoying yours. And when we are examples, when we model it for our children to be open, to be honest, to allow them to see our struggles in a reverent way, you know, and not in an inappropriate way. But when they don't see us as perfect and having it all together, then they realize it's okay. And they can be honest about themselves. And I'm very proud of my children. They're very honest about their foibles and their mistakes. And they, in turn, are helping others around them.
Interesting enough, it's talking about spiritual health. I don't know that when you started to talk about your story and then put it in a book that you were going to realize that you were talking about spiritual health, but it really is spiritually healthy. It's not healthy for us to be closed up. It's not healthy for us to not talk about our foibles. And it sounds like what you're doing is freeing many of us up to be able to talk about that.
That's my prayer, that people will begin to have this dialogue about who they really are and become authentic and to have this opportunity to minister to one another. I think that's so important for us.
I hope that there's somebody listening today who literally turns off the car engine and calls their pastor or a friend and just has this kind of a conversation, maybe for the first time, a very open conversation. And it's my guess they're not going to be shamed, but that they're going to receive that kind of acceptance. I appreciate that so much.
That would be so exciting.
Wouldn't it be? Mm-hmm. It'd be worth all the time and energy that you put in putting this book together on your life. You know, at the end of the book, you talk about how you've learned to cling to God every day. What does this clinging look like?
I read somewhere that cling actually means to wrap. And sometimes we just have to wrap ourselves around God and just hang on tight. And this is what I have found, is just to wrap around Jesus and let him hold me. Jesus himself uses this image. And that clinging, that abiding, that's where we get our strength. That's where we get our feeding and ministry.
When we don't have the strength to do it, what do we do?
Relax. God's got us. And I think we think it's something we have to do. And we're told in the scripture, it's God who works in us. We don't need to strive. It says, be still and know that I am God. Relax. God's got us. He's not going to let us go.
Well, Ruth, that is great advice. And actually, it takes a lot of the pressure off. I think sometimes we who call ourselves Christians feel like we have to be some kind of a perfect person, or we have to have it all together. And yet in reality, the call here that I hear you saying is to be authentic, to be yourself, that really there is no greater witness than a person who is open and vulnerable about his or her love for God and their struggles. I don't know about you, but I can't relate to perfect people. What words of advice, again, would you give to that person who is in the process or just beginning the process of even recognizing that they're kind of in a pile?
My advice would be the principles that have held me together. That is, that I knew that God loved me unconditionally. There was not anything I could do to make him love me more. There wasn't anything I could do to make him love me less. His love was so total and so complete that it couldn't be added to or subtracted from. Not only did I know he loved me, but I knew that he would show me what to do. If I would just be still and listen for his voice, he would guide me, he would direct me. And then I knew that God would bring good out of my mess. And that's the hope, that whatever we're going through, whatever mountain we have to dig through, God will bring good out of it for his purpose and his glory. He began in Genesis 1:1 creating out of chaos. And when we give our ruins to him, he builds something beautiful for himself. God doesn't stop at ruins. That's where he begins.
God doesn't stop at ruins. That's where he begins. Ruth Graham, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
And that concludes Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with author Ruth Graham here on the Homeward Broadcast. We've been talking about righteousness in the midst of ruins. Ruth has written a book on this topic called In Every Pew Sits a Broken Heart. And as Ben pointed out to me during the last break, not every church has pews anymore. So, I mean, which the reference, of course, is just because we're going to church, I mean, you might be sitting on a folding chair. You might be standing up or sitting on the floor. But the reality is we're all hurting people, and we're all broken people, and God can build something beautiful out of those ruins. And Jim, I know you have an illustration to share along those lines that kind of emphasizes that point, and I want you to share it now as we conclude today's program.
In our conversation today, I'm reminded of that story that I love. It's the story of the Velveteen Rabbit. It's the story that most parents in our generation read to our children. You probably read it to your children. I know I did to mine. And one of the parts of the story of the Velveteen Rabbit is a place where the old skin horse gives some advice to the Velveteen Rabbit. And the skin horse has lived longer than anyone else in the nursery, and he has a brown coat, but it's kind of balding, and the arms are raggedy, and the face doesn't look all that good, and there's stuffing falling out in every place. And then what I remember is that the rabbit kind of leans over to the horse and says, "What is real? Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and, you know, stick out handle or whatever?" And I love what the skin horse says. "Real isn't how you're made. It's the thing that happens to you when a child really loves you for a long, long time. You know, then you become real." And the rabbit goes to the skin horse, "Does it hurt?" And I remember the skin horse said, "Well, sometimes it does," being truthful. "When you are real, you don't mind being hurt. Does it happen all at once?" the rabbit asks the skin horse, or is it bit by bit? And the skin horse gives a very important sentence. "It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily or have sharp edges or are all carefully kept. You know, generally, by the time you're real, you know, most of your hair has fallen off and your eyes are dropping out and, you know, you get loose at the joints and you get very shabby." What is so profound at the end of this is he says, "But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who don't understand, but there are many people who this is a message that is resonating with them. And I appreciate so much the fact that Ruth Graham is willing to be authentic and tell her story and know that we can be authentic before God, and that God hears our needs, he hears our prayers, and he wants to respond to us because we are his children. Well, I love that imagery that Ruth Graham just shared a moment ago, and that's the heart of redemption, isn't it? The fact that every one of us comes to the Lord with a broken heart, and when God puts it back together again, it's better and it's stronger than ever before. Again, my thanks to Ruth Graham for spending the past couple of programs with us. She has an amazing testimony. It was very inspiring to me as well. Here's a woman who's lived in a very prominent home, and yet she's willing to be authentic. I think what I appreciate most about Ruth Graham's testimony is actually two things. First, that she was able to take her ruins, her two divorces and her daughter's out-of-wedlock pregnancies, and she gave those ruins to God. And the second thing I appreciate about Ruth Graham's testimony is that the way her parents showed her unconditional love throughout the entire process. I mean, here's the daughter of one of the most famous evangelists in the entire world, and most people would figure that she'd never have to deal with something like a divorce. And when the second divorce happened, she comes home, she finds her father waiting for her, and he says, "I love you. Welcome home." Now brought tears to my eyes. What a great picture of God's love for all of us.
Boy, it certainly is. And if you are just joining us, just catching the tail end of this release right now, and you didn't get a chance to hear much of any of the program, I want you to go back to our archives at homeward.com, or we'll just send you a CD of this. Just write to us. You're going to ask for the program, Dr. Jim Burns' Conversation with Ruth Graham. The title is Righteousness in the Midst of Ruins, and we'll send you a copy of this audio CD with part one and part two of the conversation. We'll do so as our way of thanking you for your gift of any amount in support of our ministry. We are completely listener-supported broadcast outreach. We rely on your prayers and faithful financial support. If you could send a gift of $50 or $100, even $250 right now or more, we would love to hear from you and really appreciate receiving that gift today. You can write to Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, the zip code 92693, or you can give a gift online through our secure website at homeward.com. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.